The following program is a presentation of the Flypod New Media Network, www.theflypod.com.
Welcome to Commentary from the Edge. I'm your host, Albert Lewis. Today my rant is entitled, The American Suicide Pact. Some of you might think this is sort of a strange title. And before I get into the meat of my rant, let me tell you why I came up with such a morbid title. I've been sort of a political junkie ever since 1980. And at 30 years of age, I decided that I had to start voting, mainly because I thought Jimmy Carter was such a poor excuse for a president that I had to do something to get that man out of office. But in the last 30 years, I have come to a definite conclusion that Jimmy Carter might have been onto something when he made the statements about American malaise. Well, I've taken it one step farther, and now I've come to the conclusion that we, the citizens of the United States, we the people, are engaged or have entered into a suicide pact. That is the only thing that makes sense. And after I lay the foundation for why I think we're engaged in a mutual suicide pact, I think most of you will probably agree. Now, when I say suicide, I don't mean that we all want to die for our lives to end. When I say suicide pact, I mean the death of our system, our nation, the American dream. That, I believe, is in jeopardy from the American Suicide Pact. First of all, government spending is obviously out of control. If you pay any attention to, and you couldn't help but pay attention to, the state of the economy in this country, and it's basically due to either government spending, including fraud, waste, and abuse of up to 30% of what they take in taxes from us, and government interference, overregulation, and just downright mismanagement. Let's start with the biggest issue, and that is the national debt. And sister to that is the deficit. But that's just the tip of the iceberg, because unseen and almost unspoken of are the unfunded liabilities. And most economists and most people who are knowledgeable about these things, estimate the unfunded liabilities north of $100 trillion. Massive debt our politicians have obligated us to over the last half century. Think about that. $100,000 billion. And during the last budget crisis, they were arguing over $1 trillion or $1.2 trillion, cutting the deficit by $1.2 trillion over the next 10 years. Okay? So that means if the budgets are running about $1.5 trillion deficit every year, that means we're going to, in 10 years, we would have added around $15 trillion to the debt. And they want to cut perhaps $3 trillion of that. So we will still accumulate upwards of $10 trillion in the next decade. And who knows how much the unfunded liabilities will increase. Now, anybody with any kind of a financial sense, a financial common sense, will understand that we are already in a hole so deep that this country will never pull out. Understand what I'm saying, people. We are in so much debt, so many obligations and liabilities that the full faith and credit of the United States is backing, that it will never be paid. We cannot dig ourselves out of this hole. And so our politicians, Democrats, Republicans, liberals, conservatives, independents, the Greens, the members of the Tea Party, we're all arguing about, not about if we're going to save this nation's financial structure. We're fighting over how long it's going to take before the roof caves in. Or to use another analogy, before the train runs off the track and over a cliff. Because there has been no, absolutely no plan or bills or suggestions proposed by anyone, any camp, or any political persuasion that actually addresses the fundamental issues, the fundamental problems. And what has gotten us to this point and what continues to drive us to the point of financial collapse has not been addressed by anyone. Thinking people, educated people, knowledgeable people, and I consider myself in that group, and anyone listening to this podcast are concerned enough to seek other opinions, to be well-read, to try to understand the situation this country's in. And yet, we collectively, we the people, do absolutely nothing that's really effective about the problem. We continue to focus on ideological issues surrounding the political parties, the differences among the political parties. The Tea Party was a mild distraction for a while. They got my hopes up and then let me down. But we're back in the same old rut, and we're barreling down that track, and we're barreling towards the end of the track and that cliff that's waiting for us, and we do nothing effective about it. And it doesn't end there. If the deficit was the only problem, then I could say maybe, just maybe, we might be able to turn it around. But that's not the only problem, by a long shot. At this time, when we are borrowing 40 cents of every dollar that the government spends, were you aware that more than $60 billion a year is given away in foreign aid? Now, it would be one thing if it went to starving refugees in Somalia or Indonesia or Haiti, or some other deserving group of people who, for no fault of their own, are victims of nature, are victims of this planet we live on. But we send foreign aid to nearly 30 countries, and some of that aid goes to countries who are obviously not our friends. The glaring example is Pakistan. Now, we all felt good about the assassination of Osama bin Laden in Pakistan. But the backstory is that we give Pakistan tens of millions of dollars, adding up to billions in the last decade or so, in foreign aid and also in military aid. Now, why would we do that when we know for a fact that Pakistan is one of the countries who are involved in the proliferation of nuclear weapons? Remember Professor A.Q. Khan, the Pakistani nuclear scientist that was caught red-handed disseminating nuclear information and technology to countries like Iran, North Korea, Syria? And what was the Pakistani's reaction to his exposure as a source of nuclear proliferation on the face of the planet? They sentenced him to house arrest in his luxurious homestead somewhere in Pakistan. The super secret helicopter that crashed during the assassination of bin Laden was our newest stealth version. And what did the Pakistanis do? They wasted no time whatsoever in granting Communist China access to that wreckage. Why in the world are we giving a country that is obviously not our friend, not our ally, billions of dollars in foreign aid? Why would we allow our government, the people we send to represent us, to do our bidding? Why in the world would we allow them to take our hard-earned money in the form of taxes and send it overseas to a country like Pakistan? But it gets even worse. China holds about $1.5 trillion of our debt. And did you know that we give foreign aid to China? To China! We borrow money from China, pay interest on it, and then turn some of that money back to them Give it to them. Give it to them free of charge, free of interest, after we borrowed it from that government. That would be like you being in hoc to your bank or your credit card or your credit union. Borrow money, borrow more money from them, and then make a donation to their employees for their Christmas party or to do with whatever they will. It's insane. And yet, we the people, in full knowledge of what our government is doing with our tax dollars, do absolutely nothing constructive or effective to change it. We allow them to continue, these politicians, to spend our money in ways that are just completely stupid. There is no other way to describe it. It's just plain stupid. As if that stupidity wasn't enough, there's even more. Did you know that our nation maintains more than 700 military bases around the world? In addition to the two wars we're fighting and the semi-war in Libya, we still maintain thousands, tens of thousands of troops in Japan and Korea and even in Europe. That war has been over for over 60 years, and we still have troops stationed in Europe. Why? Why in the world can't a successful country like Japan, like South Korea, and what about the European Common Market? They banded together for economic reasons. Can't they band together for military protection? Why in the world are we spending billions upon billions of dollars to protect people that have the means and the resources to protect themselves? And who are we protecting them from? Honestly, who are we protecting them from? Russia is not in any shape to threaten anybody except for maybe some of the small Balkan states that they border. China, they're too busy trying to make money and control us economically. But if they did anything stupid militarily, all we'd have to do is cut the trade with them and their economy would collapse. So who or what are we protecting these countries from? It doesn't make sense. And yet, election cycle after election cycle, we the people listen to these politicians snow us, flim-flam us, cheat us, make fools of us, and we return them to Washington to continue the cycle. If someone did something self-destructive, like taking drugs, drinking excessively, driving like a maniac out there, risking his life, after a while, we might come to the conclusion that they're suicidal. We might even come to the conclusion, after trying unsuccessfully so many times, doing whatever we could to help them, that they are beyond help, that there is no help. You've seen stories like that. You might even have a situation like that in your own extended family, that no matter what you do, no matter how you try, no matter what kind of logic you use, that person just can't or won't see it. Either they don't care, or they're so enamored of their lifestyle that they don't care about the future. They want to live large right now and forget about their old age. Forget about future generations. Forget about what life is going to be like in the next 10 or 20 years if we continue this ridiculous fiscal policy. You would label that person suicidal. And when I look at how we the people respond to what the politicians are doing to us, there's only one conclusion I can come to. There is a subconscious, subliminal suicide motivation running through the American populace. What other excuse, what other reason could there be for what's happening? Now, so far, I've only discussed fiscal and financial issues, but there are other indications that there is a mutual suicide pact between Americans. For instance, why in the world would the citizens of this nation allow the politicians to perpetuate a situation where there is uncontrolled illegal immigration across our southern border? We know for a fact that these illegal immigrants bring diseases. They add to the social burden. The poor, the miseducated, the uneducated, they contribute to the crime rate. It's possible they could even have ties to terrorism. We know that the drug smuggling is almost out of control. So rich people, corporations, can make 2 or 3% more profit or whatever they gain from hiring cheap illegal labor. The politicians facilitate this situation and allow it to continue. Don't the people who run the government, and I'm speaking mainly about Caucasian people at this point. We might have a black president right now. We think we have one black governor, a few black faces scattered here and there in Congress. But for all intents and purposes, white people still control the government of the United States of America. And the way it's shaping up, this one term with a black president was an anomaly. But for all practical purposes, it's run by white people. Don't concerned white people see what is happening with the influx of illegal aliens? Can't they look at statistics about the birth rates, project a few decades or a couple of generations into the future, and understand what's going to happen to their children, to their grandchildren, their great-grandchildren, who will live in a fractured society? White people will no longer be the majority race. They will not hold the balance of political power in this country unless we change the type of government where we don't have one man, one vote. That's the only way I can see. And then even if you did that, how are you going to control a majority minority population when there's still going to be the grudges, there's still going to be the animosity, there's still going to be that memory about slavery, Jim Crow, continued discrimination and racism? There's going to be a lot of people with grudges, with hatred. And yet, intelligent white people, educated white people, concerned white people, politically active white people, let the politicians they send to Congress and elect to the office of the president perpetuate a system, a policy of uncontrolled illegal immigration, and set the stage for racial strife and instability for their grandchildren, maybe even for their children. Who knows how long it's going to take? But the current estimate is by 2030, white people will be a minority in this country. And yet, the average white person seems unconcerned. Except for Sheriff Arpaio out in Arizona, I don't see any politicians being all that concerned about it. Another indicator, how can the white power structure and the criminal justice system in this country continue to parole and release rapists, murderers, child molesters back out into civilized society? What goes through the minds of educated white people sitting on parole boards looking at people who have molested children, little blonde-haired, blue-eyed Susie? And after 10 or 20 years, they tell this man, oh, well, you've demonstrated good behavior while you were in prison and there were no children for you to rape. And now we're going to release you and we're going to play Russian roulette with some other blonde-haired, blue-eyed little girl out there. What kind of people releases these monsters back out to prey on innocent people, on innocent children? It's suicidal. And it's not just the white majority who seems bent on suicide. Look at what's happening in the black community. We as black people continue to tolerate a situation where a fear of snitching, telling the cops about criminal activity, allows the crime rate to soar in our community, making it unsafe for man, woman, child, or beast on inner city streets. We continue to allow our teenagers and some preteens to engage in premarital sex to the point where 70% of black children are born out of wedlock. We have the ability to mount a campaign of peer pressure on these young people. And yet we sit back and blame it on racism when we have the ability and the power to turn the situation around. And yet, year after year, it gets worse. And we stand by and do basically nothing except make excuses and blame racism. over the years, I've been in many conversations with other black people, family, friends, associates, and even strangers. And there seems to be an undercurrent of hoping or wishing that this system would fail because white people would be hurt. And my question every time is, if this system fails, yeah, white people will be hurt, but black people will be hurt worse. If the economy fails, who do you think's going to suffer the brunt of that failure? Look at the unemployment statistics now. Yeah, unemployment might be 8 or 9% for whites, but heck, it could be double that for black people. And so I almost sense a willingness among a certain percentage of black people to suffer through a collapse just so white people will suffer, just so they fail. It borders on suicide. So you see, no matter what aspect of American life, the American experience, the American society that we examine, there is evidence that the American people have this fatalistic streak in our behavior, our thinking. It's almost like Nero fiddling while Rome burns. We see it coming. We see the damage that it's doing. But I guess on an individual basis, our lives are so cushy that we can't step out of our comfort zone to secure the future, to preserve the cushiness. And when you see that happening, the only logical conclusion is that in some form or fashion, there is a suicide pact among the American people. And whether it be subconscious, subliminal, motivated by guilt, or whatever, I don't see how anyone else can conclude anything else except there exists an American suicide pact. And that's really sad because unlike the Soviet Union and its citizens towards the end of the collapse of that nation, of that empire, they had no choice. They were captives of their government. But we, the citizens of the United States, with the most freedom of any peoples on the planet Earth at any time, not only do we willingly allow the people that we elect to office to lead us off of a cliff, to mismanage our tax dollars, but on top of that, we contribute money to their campaigns. We actually reward them for running this country into the ground. But my fellow Americans, sadly, it's too little, too late. Until next time, I'm your host, Elbert Lewis, from the Edge.